Chairman of Niagara Capital Partners, and with me is Albert Friedberg, the Portfolio Manager of the Friedberg Global Macro Hedge Fund. Good morning, Albert.
Good morning.
We'll conduct our call today as we usually do. We like to run for about 40 minutes. I'm going to put some general questions to Albert to begin, and then we'll respond to your questions. If you have a question that you would like to put to us, you may do so by mailing it to erott, that's E-R-O-T-T, at niagaracapital.ca, Niagara Capital, N-I-A-G-A-R-A, C-A-P-I-T-A-L.ca. Thank you. Okay, let's begin. Al, in January 2007, you oriented the fund's portfolio to take advantage of what you thought then was a coming crisis in credit. In January 2009, you abandoned that orientation and reoriented the book to take advantage of reflation. And now in January 2010, you've abandoned at least temporarily the reflationary orientation in favor of a deflationary one. Is there something about January that gets your creative juices flowing? Is it the cold Canadian winter?
Not really, David. It's not even a 1 month decision. It's a process, which, you know, we begin that day. It's actually not precise that it was January, but it takes a little bit of time, and I do think that, for instance, the last shift that we've been making began probably sometime in November. Or maybe even, probably November, and then went on November, December, and January is where we put it into effect in a more aggressive manner.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the way we've made the transition, or the way you've made the transition
from
a deflationarily oriented portfolio to the one we're at now?
Sure. Our assumption was that, and this is the way we stated it too in our communication to the shareholders, was that the very, very strong reflationary moves by the Fed and the Treasury both would have some effect in lifting asset prices, and that that began to occur sometime the first quarter of the year. We had assumed that the Fed's moves would reflect themselves in a fairly large expansion in bank credit, and that this expansion would have, as I said before, a strong upward effect on stock prices, on commodity prices, on bond prices, etc. It did happen, but the effect was relatively short, actually. If we look at the aggregate figures for money in the United States and for credit in the United States, we see that the large expansion of money, first of all, we had an explosion in the monetary base of the United States. The monetary base is what the Federal Reserve controls. That is the money that they can create upon which, what you would call the base of the pyramid, upon which money and credit can be built. The monetary base exploded, and money and credit rose for quite a few months. And then sometime in July, it began to level off. And stock prices and commodity prices, generally asset prices, continued to rise on sort of an inertial force for many months after that. But the fuel behind that move was actually dissipating, was being used, and we come to towards the end of the year, and we find that money and credit are basically flat; they're not growing anymore. So there's been a very serious change in that picture, in that reflationary picture. Again, the reflationary impact or impulse that we had originally made us think that the only threat to asset prices would come from the Fed finally putting an end to this policy, what they call an exit policy or an exit strategy. And the exit strategy would have been to reduce quantitative easing, to stop purchasing mortgage-backed securities, to stop purchasing treasuries, and to begin selling, in fact, some of those assets in order to contract the base and in order to contract reserves. That we thought would be the only threat to the environment, to the picture. And as a result, we, for instance, took short positions in Eurodollar contracts, expecting that sooner or later the Fed would exit. Being long, we were long across the board with assets. We would still benefit from the rise in prices, but we would protect ourselves by being short the interest rate futures, and thus protect ourselves against a rise in rates. That was a picture towards the second half of last year. But as I said before, something funny happened on the way, and the funny thing that happened on the way is that for some reason, and we have some hypothesis why this happened, but for some reason, banks did not put to use their excess reserves. Money and credit stagnated, are stagnating. They threatened even to contract. We have some indication that in the last few weeks it started to contract. And so the threat, the real threat, is not an exit strategy in a rise in rates, but the real threat now is a sharp downward move in asset prices that perhaps will end on its own and find some equilibrium level lower than here, and perhaps not. We can't really tell at this point how this is likely to end. We do think that longer term, and that is going beyond the next 6 months or beyond the next 9 months, the amount of excess reserves in the system, the amount of monetary stimulation that we have created, will have an impact, will have an inflationary impact on the economy, and not just on the U.S. economy, but worldwide. But that's something that we are now pushing forward a little bit and not concentrating on. The most immediate danger that we see today is that asset prices are, in our opinion, rolling over and threaten to maybe test the last year's lows. So we have positioned ourselves accordingly, began to move out of our long positions towards the end of last year, and kept some of those positions, but began to sell other instruments as hedges against those positions. I use the word hedges sort of loosely. It's not an exact hedge, but it's, we know that markets are highly correlated, and so the S&P, for practical purposes, is a good proxy for world asset prices today. And so we use that a little bit more often as a way to protect our overall portfolio. So today we are net short assets, let's call it that way, in a loose way, by way of S&P futures.
Can we talk about some of the portfolios individually, Al?
Yeah. Well, it's right. I mean, the impression I'm giving you is a little bit too imprecise, but we are long. For instance, we continue to be long gold. We think gold is a good asset to own in this environment, even if we think that we have or we are about to witness a deflation in asset prices, and that's for reasons that we have explained many times in the past. Gold acts as gold is, in our view, is re-entering the international monetary system, and many countries are about to or will continue to add to reserves, and I think that's going to make it that's going to put a firm bid under the price of gold. So we are long gold. as against that, we have gone short euro dollars, the European currency, so that we don't allow ourselves just to trade against dollars. We think that gold is got its own unique play, and that's all we want. We don't want we're not interested in the rise of gold as a function of a declining dollar. In fact, we think that the dollar could get stronger. So we have a gold position. We own an interesting position in insurance companies in the U.S. We're long position in those insurance companies, a position that we acquired early last year at very much lower prices, and we think that they are still undervalued. And we still own a smattering of H shares in Hong Kong. We reduced a lot of that position, but we still have a good position in Hong Kong H shares because of the potential upside that the gap in prices represents. And we do have still a position, we're long commodities. Our manager has reduced that commodity exposure substantially, and I'll listen, that's independent of our own thinking. Which makes me feel that we're probably onto something, because he has reduced that position. That means that he feels too that there are strong deflationary winds here. So that's the, I would call the main elements in our portfolio. And as I say, the other side of it is that we are short. Oh, but one more thing, we are also long. German bonds, a good quantity of German bonds. We feel that the deflation in assets, especially the potential deflation in Europe, is favorable for long-term nominal bonds in Europe. And so we long bonds, which we feel are probably today the best, the highest grade bonds in the world, and we're looking for much lower long-term yields there. As against that, I said we are short S&P futures, and probably net short a little bit of it, so that should the market go lower, we're likely to make some money despite the long position that we're carrying.
You haven't spoken about your currency pocket.
Long Asia, we still like India and Indonesia, and we're short euros. Again, sort of a bit of a hedge position or a spread position. Let's call it that way. Not a hedge, but a spread position. We feel that Asia still has an upside in relative terms.
And finally, your equity market neutral pocket.
Yeah, that remains the way we've been doing it till now. Not too many changes have taken place there. We do think that the market is becoming a little bit more rational, a little bit more discriminating. Last year was just everything, all assets were going up, and so it was a little bit difficult. In fact, The lesser quality stocks were the ones that did better last year, and that was not something that was that we expected, but that was something that hurt us. I believe that now the markets have become a little bit more rational, and we are beginning to see that better stocks go up, better balance sheets are doing better, and that should be favorable to us, because we not only use a momentum strategy, but we also are value investors, and that's going to make a difference.
Do I sense that you believe that unlike last year, there's more dispersion both geographically and by sector in equities this year?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. I think that's sort of like the implications that or let's put it this way, I think that as bull markets or as bull moves mature, especially past that initial explosive stage, you start getting a lot more dispersion. And I think that the period going forward will show a great deal of dispersion, so that many stocks, even as the market goes down, many stocks will be going up, and other stocks will go down far more than the market. I think it's a good period and a good opportunity to be involved in that strategy, in a long short strategy.
Do you have a view? I'm now starting to glance at the questions that are coming in. Here's a question that comes from Europe. Person wants to know your view of the carry trade. Is in light of this deflationary thesis, is the view of carry trades affected?
I think so. I believe so. I think that the carry trade doesn't work well, of course, when rates are rising, and that's obvious. But it also should not work well when we have a shock to the system, like a deflation of an asset deflation. It should not work well. As an example, the U.S. is probably the cheapest currency to carry today, and yet the U.S. dollar has been strong, and we believe it will be stronger still. So it's not a clear we don't have a clear decision whether a carry trade is going to be good or not. For instance, the carry trade is good on the credit side, being long bonds funded by short-term money. It's still a good strategy today. I'm not sure that one can generalize and say the carry trade. There are parts. There are many carry trades. Some of them are good and some of them are not so good. But one has to be careful, though, in the coming environment if we get this deflationary shock.
In commodity markets, are you characterizing commodity markets as asset markets that are threatened by the new or the reduction in available money and credit? Are there some commodities that will operate against that tendency?
Yes, I think some will. I think some will. As I see it today, this may change in the next little while. As I see it today, base metals are being affected, and rightly so. By the way, in most base metals, we have fairly good stock positions, fairly good inventory positions. So a lot of it was speculative, and I think that's going to be affected by this I shouldn't call it, it's not a contraction of credit, but it's at least a flattening of money and credit growth. Other commodities, such as sugar, as an example, or cocoa, as an example, I believe will continue to do well because they have some very strong fundamentals behind them. That's as we stand today. Of course, we can't tell how far this deflationary impulse will go, and ultimately, if it's very, very powerful, it will carry everything down. But as it stands today, we still think that there's going to be pockets of strength in the commodity market, just like there's going to be some pockets of strength in even stock markets around the world. There will be certain stocks and groups of stocks that will do well, and that's something that we should be careful about generalizing the position.
So again, more dispersion this year than last year?
Definitely more dispersion. For example, we think crude oil is a commodity that can be quite a bit affected by the scenario that we're painting today.
Could you elaborate?
Yeah, I believe that crude oil trading today around 75 to 78 in that range could see much lower levels in a world that sees falling asset prices. I would not be surprised to see crude oil in the 60s. So there's going to be some interesting opportunities there, a lot of dispersion, and if you're right, and you call those the ones that go up properly and the ones that go down properly, you're going to make a lot of money.
If when we talk about commodities, in particular oil and precious metals, we think immediately of geopolitical events in general, and the mind drifts towards the Middle East, and in particular to Iran. And then more specifically about commodities, we think about China and the infrastructure, trade, and the enormous inventory requirements there. Do you have any feelings about first politics in general, and any ways that you're thinking about insulating your portfolio against political, geopolitical events?
Well, yeah, the geopolitical events, for instance, Iran and oil, are intimately connected, and I think that if something happens there, it will definitely have, at the very least, a short-term impact on the oil markets, and it will be quite a bullish impact. It's very difficult to protect against such moves. You know, one can use options, and we have used options to do that. But and it's imprecise because we have no timing, we don't have certainty of it. Very little can be. You can build a very. It's very difficult to build a proper position to take advantage of this. But we should keep it in mind that if it happens or when it happens, it will have some strong bullish impact on crude oil prices, at least in the front months. And maybe that's a way, and that's in fact the way we're looking at it, and it's a way of taking a guarded negative view of the market by emphasizing ladder positions, by emphasizing ladder months, the 2011 and the 2012 and the 2013 positions. China is everybody's favorite as the excuse for going for commodities going up. It's not inconceivable that most of the buying was already most of that heavy buying was already done. There's been a lot of stock building in China, so that a slowdown in the economic activity in China can have a very significant bearish impact on commodity prices. Now that we're seeing China tightening, that should be an added. That should bring added pressure to prices if our regular scenario comes into being. I think that China will be an added deflationary force.
An added deflationary force.
Yes, in the near term, as they tighten credit.
I see. Okay. Can we talk a little bit about the in your bond portfolio? You are both long bunds and long tips. On one hand, a deflationary bet. On the other hand, a bet that at least at first blush looks like an inflationary bet. Does this reflect a general need to be less certain in an environment that feels a bit slippery by comparison to the way you saw it at this time last year?
Well, I think tips have priced well at the U.S. Remember, the tips are based on U.S. CPI, and the bonds are operating in the European market in a euro environment. So there's clearly more inflation in the U.S. environment than there is in Europe. And because they're priced well, by that I mean they're priced very much in line with running inflation rates and nominal rates, I don't think that there is any big downside. I think that being long TIPS is almost the same as being long nominal bonds in the U.S. at this point in time. And I don't think that that's a contradiction to our general asset deflation theme. Bonds, on the other hand, are as I said, they operate in the euro currency area, and there is some severe deflationary pressures in Europe, and I believe that the bonds will do very well in that scenario.
I've got a question here that I know that interests you. It speaks in general about the political situation in the United States. The Obama administration presented its budget just a few days ago. The State of the Union address was the week before. It was last week. How do you see the political environment affecting asset prices? How do you see it affecting your fund?
Well, the budget is a very very political document. It's clearly a anti capital budget. It is designed to tax. Let's say it's designed to tax capital, to tax all the sources of wealth creation. It is designed to create almost a polarized society where you have maybe 50% of the population doesn't pay any taxes, and 50% is taxed quite heavily. And the size of the budget, the increases in spending are remarkable. And I believe the market is starting to look at the threat, and the market knows it's coming, the threat of increased taxation over the next few years. This level of deficit cannot be sustained. So we will see a very large increase in taxes over the next 5 and 6 years, or maybe more. And I believe that the market will discount this. And the discounting of this process involves a reduction in the multiple of earnings that you want to pay, so that P ratios should be affected by negatively by the scenario of rising taxes into the future. Unfortunately, this is something that that the administration hasn't yet become fully aware of the danger of this strategy on growth, the impact on growth. It's not even a question of the impact on the on currency and solvency and on any of these things, but just the impact on growth alone is substantial, and it will lead to, in our view, to everything else being equal, will lead to lower stock prices.
How do you think the deflationary impulse and in general, this weak environment, this weak political environment for U.S. equity prices are going to affect the emerging market world? Do you foresee rate hikes? I'm quoting from a question that was sent from a listener in Europe. Do you foresee rate hikes even in a deflationary environment?
Well, it's possible. I think that the way emerging markets will be affected is most likely going to be affected by way of weaker commodity prices. So, for instance, the weak crude oil prices will affect Russia, and it will affect the Middle East, it will affect Venezuela, it will affect all the oil producers. Same thing is true with weak base metals. It will affect Australia. The Australian dollar recently hit a six-month low. So it doesn't have to. The emerging markets can be affected by deflationary scenario, even without a rise in interest rates. I think that we will not. I'm making a general statement. I'm not really answering this question only, but I'm saying that I don't think that we will get out of the inevitability of rising rates. I believe that at some point in time, money and credit will expand. Banks don't sit on excess reserves forever. They are in the business of lending money, and they will find ways to do it when they finally have some confidence and when they feel that they can do it with the proper margins. When they begin to do that, they will unleash an incredible they will unleash an explosion in money, unless the Fed gets tough. And the way to get tough is to raise rates quickly and powerfully. And I'm not really sure. I don't think it will happen. I don't think the Fed will be able to have the will, the courage to do that. But that's as I said at the beginning of my discussion, that's something that we're pushing now forward. We want to deal first with the problem at hand, the weak monetary multiplier, very weak monetary multiplier, the fact that money and credit are not growing. That's a sign of trouble. But we should keep in the back of our minds that the moment will come, as I said, 6 months or 9 months or maybe 2 years, I don't know. But the moment will come when banks will put to use that money and we will see an expansion of money and an inflationary problem down the road.
I think that we've circled now right back to the beginning, and that seems to be a full coverage of your views at an appropriate time to let people to get back to work. So I thank you for your time this morning, Al, and wish you the best of luck for the coming quarter.
Thank you, David.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners.